tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we are speaking with Danielle Bays. Danielle is the Senior Analyst for Cat Protection and Policy at the Humane Society of the United States. Danielle works with animal shelters, cat advocates, policymakers, and other stakeholders to broaden support for community cat programs nationwide and to improve the welfare of all cats. Danielle holds a BS in Animal Science from Cornell University and an MS in Animals and Public Policy from the Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University. With more than 20 years of experience advocating for various animals, Danielle's path to professional cat lady only began after finding her then new backyard inhabited by a family of felines, which led her to building a comprehensive citywide community cat program. Her backyard now boasts a catio for her 5 indoor cats and a vintage Charlie Brown seesaw. Excellent, Danielle. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Stacey. I'm glad to be back.
I know. It's so great to have you here on the Community Cats Podcast. You and HSUS have been really good supporters of the show. And obviously, you are just so connected with so many groups across the country, groups, individuals. Tell us, because it's been a while since we've had you on the show. So put yourself right up in that balcony overseeing all of the United States. What's life like for community cats right now in the United States?
I like to think that life is always improving for community cats. There's always challenges. There's always kind of like a step forward, a step back kind of thing here and there. But, you know, more and more I see communities, shelters having a community cat program manager, community cat coordinator on their staff, shelters really embracing community cats as part of their larger program. Continue to see policies, whether it's local ordinances or some improvements in the state law for community cats and support for the people who are trying to help those populations. I'd like to be optimistic, but, you know, at the same time, we're struggling in the community cat world, some of the vet shortages, like everyone else. The, we talk about TNR, the N is very important.
Yeah, I've had people really ask, how can we work around the challenge of only being able to access 2 spay-neuter appointments in a week's time, and the demands are just so huge for access to spay-neuter services. And it really is a tremendous challenge and part of the United Spay Alliance, which is really trying to work on addressing some of those problems and some of those issues, either through efficiency, through allowing, there's proposed legislation out there for letting technicians do some neutering. And so just really thinking about, you know, the role of the veterinarian and the technicians, and even maybe there's a mid-level role, like a nurse practitioner role in there. So there's a variety of different potential solutions out there so that then there might be more spay-neuter capacity within private practice as well as the nonprofits that are out there trying to serve the community. I'm not sure what you're seeing out there.
I see people getting creative, looking at different ways that they can, you know, change up their scheduling for appointments for community cats. You know, and a lot of this comes from some of the things that you've developed, Stacey. I've recently been talking with people about the cat cycling and how we can look at doing more TNR surgeries at different times of years to balance surgeries for other cat populations. But I do see an interest too in expanding the role of vet techs and how they can help the increased demand for vets who are trained in the high quality, high volume spay neuter. With the community cats, there's so many, but it's a great opportunity for those high volume clinics and to really get a lot of cats sterilized at one time. TNR, I think of it as a tool. That's all it is. It's a tool, and we can use it in many different ways. So how can we use it most effectively? And I am always impressed with some of the creativity and some ideas that people have, and to be able to build that efficiency. And sometimes it's out of almost nothing that they're starting from and being able to accomplish quite a lot. There's so much we can learn from each other. And that's kind of where I look at my role, as you said, up above, seeing what's going on and trying to hear what people are doing, some of their challenges and how they're overcoming it, because it's really inspiring.
Yeah. And you don't have to be a veterinarian to increase spay neuter capacity in your community. I mean, in 2000, we did not have enough spay neuter veterinarians at an affordable price able to sterilize feral cats. And so we created the free spay neuter monthly clinics for feral cats, and veterinarians got together on the weekends and they were in and out by 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. and they would spay neuter feral cats and actually also practice their surgery skills. And these were private practice veterinarians as well as nonprofit veterinarians. But we created that opportunity at the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society because there was a need. And I am no veterinarian at all, but I knew I needed to create more spay neuter capacity in the community. You know, if you're out there and you're trapping cats and you need more appointments, there are models out there where you can create more capacity in your communities. It's not just up to the veterinarians and the existing practices. There are MASH style clinics. You can do one day a month, one day a quarter, depending on your area. That's huge. It's huge to be able to add to more of that. Then we expanded into a mobile spay neuter clinic, the Catmobile, and there's Humane Alliance, which is now the ASPCA Alliance model of a stationary clinic. So many of these clinics were started by people who were not veterinarians. So we've all been told you have to be a veterinarian to run a clinic. That's not true, right?
It's logistics, really. It's organization and logistics. It's similar to what we think about like vet tech utilization. What do the vets do that only the vets can do? Have them do that. They could do the surgery. But when it comes to organizing and doing that kind of management, if someone else can step in, so the vets are free to actually do what only they can do, that makes sense. I think that's also why we have a lot of vets who are getting out of practice ownership and like having the corporate ownership, because they don't want to do, they don't want to be HR. They want to do medicine, right? So that's where other people can step in and help. And this, especially when we're looking at these cap challenges we have, get the creative thinker so that's can really tuck in and get the medicine done.
I agree with you 100%. And if you've been in this TNR world, you are an organizer. You are a project manager. You are a strategic thinker because there are so many demands put on us. I mean, you've been out there trapping, Danielle. You have a long list of people calling in. And where do you go? Which way do you turn? Who do you respond to first? So those are questions I get on a weekly basis here at the Community Cats Podcast. Is it first come, first serve? Is it by zip code? What's my strategy? And we want to have our TNR groups to think strategically. We also want to be able to have our spay neuter clinics to think efficiently. You sit in the legislative, the policy space. How can that be efficient? I think of politics and I go, oh, I don't want to deal with this at all. So give us an explanation of why I shouldn't be so freaked out about legislation and policy.
Policy is generally not efficient at all. I think what is that? I don't remember who that quote was from. Making sausage and making laws or things that you don't want to have to see. They're, you know, kind of really messy. And it is. But the reality is that sometimes policy is important because you can have bad policy and policy can be a barrier to being able to do things. And that can be at the state level, it can be at the local level. And you really want to be aware of what your laws say and how to navigate them. And it can be something as basic as a local ordinance that prevents cats from running at large. And that puts them at the mercy of whether your animal control agency is going to pick up stray cats and impound them and then not return them to where they are. So being aware of what your ordinance says, how it's enforced, and how you may be able to make some changes to remove some of those barriers can really help bolster the confidence people in the community have for your program.
Is there a listing of communities that have ordinances that if they trap cats, they're going to just impound them and euthanize them? Is there like a hot list of communities that really are not community cat friendly?
There isn't a hot list. I would love to have a whole database of all the community cat ordinances and all the old ordinances for all the thousands of communities across the country. And maybe someday we'll get there. But some of the laws are really complicated as far as what they say and then how they work in real time. I mean, I've done some work in looking at ordinances where, you know, you look at the ordinance on paper and it looks like it's not really good for community cats, like there would be some barriers. But you also see in that community, there's a really robust community cat program and a lot of TNR going on. So part of it is how things are enforced and what the intent is. Whether it's the animal control agency or a municipal shelter who's leading things, what is their intent with the law? Do they have laws that they utilize to be able to intervene in situations where, you know, there may be some challenges, it may be dangerous for cats, but they're not going to intervene because they're promoting TNR as a solution? You know, that may be the culture that may not be as clear on paper as far as when you look at the words in the law. That may just be kind of a crutch for law enforcement if they need to intervene. They have some power to be able to do that to fix a bad situation. But the actual community cat program in that city may be completely able to function because they do, and they've been doing it for years, and they're successful, and they're making a difference. And that's what the community is seeing. There's no need to intervene. And sometimes animal control laws or animal laws at the local level are just so old and outdated that no one even knows what they say anyhow.
Right. It's interesting, too, because, as you say, laws can be interpreted in a variety of different ways. As the staff changes, the behavior of the people can become different. And where one person might believe that a law, you're only allowed to have 10 cats in your house, and after 10 cats, you have to get a kennel license, that person that was around when that law was put into place may have just wanted it and advocated for it so that then if they did have a hoarding situation, that they would have the authority to be able to act more quickly than they would without it. But then someone new comes in, and maybe that community has had a lot of aggressive TNR. It's really in good standing. And there may be some, in the way the groups are developed, usually the founders all have anywhere between 10 and 20 cats in their house, and they're well-loved and they're cared for, but the new person who's come into town would be enforcing them to get a kennel license or asking them to do that, to go before city council to get a kennel license, just because they have taken in the cats that needed to come in. They've got them in their house. They're now over the 10. And it could be kind of an abusive situation and create a tension between a group as well as the city where it didn't exist before just because of the changing of a person into that position. Have you seen something like that happen in other communities?
I tend to see it more moving the opposite way, where, you know, the person coming in has a broader experience and isn't necessarily utilizing that law as punitive. And it's okay, it's there, I'll fall back on it as I need it. But they're not going to say there's like that 10 cat limit. They're not going to start enforcing that for cats that live outdoors. No, that's not what it was meant for. So they may not go ahead and change what the ordinance actually says, but they're not going to be enforcing that to that degree. As we see more and more community cat programs across the country and people feel more comfortable, I think in the beginning, people were really concerned about putting this cat back out. And I don't know. How can I ensure that cat's being cared for? Because I don't know the person who's caring for the cat. I haven't, you know, interacted with them. They're thinking of these cats aren't own cats. But we know that the relationship that caretakers have with their community cats is still very strong. It may not be the same as like the own cat indoors, but it's just a different relationship. Like you have different relationships with different people. You know, your best friend and your brother. There may be a different relationship, but that doesn't mean that one is less than the other. They're just different. And when we see that those people are just as dedicated to the care of those cats, I think that can really turn folks around when they recognize that. They're just kind of get over that fear, because it really does start with that fear. They're worried about the cat. They're not trying to punish people. They're just worried about the cat. And once they know that putting them back where they came from, back where their people are, is okay, that's a good thing for them. And once they get over that, they can embrace more modern cat programs.
Our friends in the Great White North want to hear from you. Humane Canada, the Federation of Humane Societies and SPCAs, and the convener of Animal Welfare in Canada is looking for presentation proposals for its annual signature conference, the Summit for Animals. This conference unites the animal welfare sector once a year in a different Canadian city. In 2025, it'll be held in beautiful Montreal from April 27th to 29th, and they have just opened their call for speakers. If you have insights, knowledge, or experience in animal welfare, consider submitting a presentation proposal by September 30th. Educational topics for next year include marketing, shelter and community medicine, farmed and wild animal welfare, community-based sheltering, fund development, and more. Visit humanecanada.ca/summit to learn more and submit your proposal. Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now. Would you like to help pet parents and their beloved pets? Pet parents in the Ticonderoga, New York area need your help. The area has few resources, but the Keeping People and Pets Together Pet Food Pantry is trying to fill that void. They provide pet parents with food and supplies as well as low-cost spay-neuter. They need donations and volunteers to help. Go to the Keeping People and Pets Together Pet Food Pantry on Facebook or email one at a time, 09@gmail.com. So this is a higher level question for folks that are out there listening that might be new to the Community Cats podcast. This is a higher level, and we are happy to share other resources. We have webinars on these topics. But I wanted to ask, Danielle, we've had lots of conversation in the cat world, and we're in the middle of kitten season here. So there's return to field, there's TNR, we have TNVR, we have TNRM, and then we have our shelters that are working really hard to have higher save rates. And so in the cat community, there has been conversation about the shelters kind of pushing cats back out into the community, ideally sterilized, but or spayed and neutered, but maybe not. What's been your take in understanding this balancing act between cat intakes in the shelter? When do you take a cat into your shelter program? When do you do all of this basket of other things that I don't think half the world knows about? They don't know what return to field is. They don't even know what TNR is. So as our listeners here who are trying to be strategic and thinking about how doing trap neuter return, working with cats in the community, turning our passion for cats into action. We call the shelter and the shelter says we're full and we can't take anybody. What do we do then?
That's a really good question. I'd say, first of all, let's step away from a lot of the jargon. We try to get like in the weeds and talking about the difference between TNR, TNVR, TNRM. Those are just variations on the same thing. And when I say TNR, it's really a community cat program. There's so much that has to do with that. When we talk about community cat programs, we're talking about those opportunities to bring kittens in to the adopted when possible. We're talking about whatever our policies are for rehoming adult cats. And that's so challenging. And one of the things that we've learned over the decades and decades in animal sheltering is that cats in the shelter, it's not necessarily the best thing. We think of a shelter as this kind of utopia. And I probably thought that too until I worked in an animal shelter. And I kind of got a reality check of what life is like for a lot of these cats. We're talking about little cages that these cats typically are in. That's fine for short term, but long term, it's not ideal. For cats that are used to being outdoors, they can really shut down. So that the kind of the stress of being in the shelter. Also, we know like the idea of bringing a cat to the shelter because that's where the cat's going to get reunited with their family is also idealistic. And for whatever reason, people don't tend to look for their cats at their shelters when they're lost like they do with dogs. So that rate that they're returned to their families, it nationally is like 3%. Some shelters are doing amazing, but generally it's pretty low because people aren't looking for them. So why are we bringing these cats into the shelter? What's the purpose? And can we do that some other way? And I think that's where if we have more options for TNR community cat programs to get those cats sterilized and go back out, for many of those cats, that's a better option. If you also think about how people acquire cats and how many people acquire cats because they adopted them off the street, they found them. They got them from a friend or a neighbor who found them. So we know those cats are coming in. I have TNR cats at my house and have moved into my house after that. And that's not just me. I have TNR cats in my neighborhood who disappeared only because the neighbor brought them in. So these things happen. We know that those cats have multiple outcomes when we return them. But if we have that service and we have really good communications with our community to be able to know when a cat really needs to be in the shelter. And so the shelter is open for those cats that really need it, those ones that aren't thriving outside. And we know who those are. I mean, you can look at those cats and you could say this cat just isn't doing well. Or if we return a cat, we have a good relationship with the people in the community. When they say, okay, we brought this cat back, but it's not doing well anymore. Like maybe the cat was good at that point, but now the cat isn't doing well. To be able to get that cat back into the shelter. So being able to have programs that allow us to use our judgment, use good common sense about what cats need to come in or not, rather than kind of strict, and we're not going to bring cats in, or we are. Like, instead of being so conscripted about what our policies are, to have that ability to use our own judgment and treat cats as individuals, to be able to assess individual situations of where they're at. But I think also, if we're not able to bring the cats into the shelter, we want to be able to provide services to those people who care about them. And whether that's being able to do TNR ourselves, have referrals, include those cats and those caretakers in access to pet food pantries and other services out there for support, so that we can increase the well-being of those cats where they are.
And really, there's so much communication behind all of that. So we like to try and encourage an environment where we play well with others in the virtual kitty cat sandbox out there. And even though you may have disagreements with how an organization is run or how people are doing things, delicately keep those lines of communication open and honest. Even if you've made a decision you don't want to work with that group, please keep the lines of communication still open, because you can listen and learn. And over time, organizations change too. And so it's just really important to be respectful to each other, especially in the middle of summer, in the middle of kitten season. It's hot. We're all sweating. It's, you know, a time where we have to do a lot of deep breathing and just try and be as patient with each other as possible. I know HSUS has also done a few sessions on burnout and some of that. Do you see that in the trapping community?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially when people get frustrated, when there isn't that good communication with the shelters or the clinic that they're working with. And like you said, that goes both ways. And having that communication, so understanding the realities. But when folks have been doing this for a long time and things have changed, it may be because there's not appointments available because there aren't vets, and it's out of your control. And you're seeing more kittens come along after you've worked so hard. That can be frustrating. And innately, there's always that issue of feeling isolated as someone who's doing TNR. A lot of times people feel like they're the only ones in the community doing that. So I think another thing that organizations can do is to help build that kind of community and coalition and networking to bring all those various cat people together so they see that they're not alone. And so not only may they have support for maybe ideas and resources, but also that emotional support. Like sometimes you might just want to vent about a situation to a friend, and you feel better for someone who actually understands what you're going through. And so I think those things can be helpful as well. But also to recognize that this is a big issue. We think about 30 to 40 million of these community cats out there. That's a lot of cats. They're there. We're not creating these situations. We're not creating community cats. We're not establishing these colonies that are there. And we're doing our best to be able to make it better for these cats and provide solutions for our community. But we can't feel like we're responsible for fixing it all alone. We're in this together.
Yeah. So every year, there's HSUS Expo, and I think you often have roundtable conversations. So if there are folks that are willing to travel there, you really make an effort to try and get the community cat people together at those events.
Yes, we do. We always have a full track of cat topics, and a lot of those do fall in community cat topics. They're not just shelter, cats in the shelter, or cat behavior or medicine. So we really try to bring a lot of community cat topics there. We have round tables where we want to have discussions and hear from people. We have a new feature the last couple of years of the coffee talks on one morning, and there's a cat topic of just people come together to talk, share information, ask questions. They really try to build that cat community there and offer more and more resources and opportunities, because I think of cats as almost like an underdog in their animal shelter world.
Danielle, if folks are interested in finding out more about what you do, how could they do that?
You can always contact me directly. Happy to have people email me. I'll try to respond to as many as possible. My email address is my first initial and my last name, dbayf@humanesociety.org. Also encourage people to go visit our Humane Pro website. That is humanepro.org. And there's a lot of information there about cats, community cats, cat declawing campaign, and other information about laws and ordinances, and as well as dogs and other animals too.
Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I just hope people stay positive. We always go through different things, whether it was a pandemic, a vet shortage. There's always something. And I think one of our strengths as a community is just resilience. Think about all the things that cats go through. Give them credit. They're smart. They're clever. And we can learn from them and stay solid throughout this and adapt. We have the tools and the know-how that we eventually will solve this cat challenge out there.
Excellent. Danielle, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on the show, and I know we'll have you on again in the future.
Looking forward to it.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.